What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Michigan, we got our Cowboys insider Bobby Bell. We got Peyton and Aiden in the back. And I know what I'll be doing when I go home today. I will be binge watching America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys on Netflix. It came out. What time did you wake up this morning to look for it?
4:30. And I watched, I got through the first like 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes.
The director, McLean Way, is joining us live on the home of America's Team, 105.3 The Fan. And he's on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, happy to be on. Thanks for having me on, Sean. Bobby, excited to talk Cowboys and America's Team, Gambler and His Cowboys. It's going to be fun.
So there's been so many documentaries and NFL networks and ESPN Sports Centuries and pieces done on the Cowboys and the divorce in the 90s. What separates this one, McLean? What makes this different?
Yeah, I think what initially drew us was just the full access to Jerry and Jimmy. And it's like, I know that they have talked individually about their relationship dating back from when they were 17 years old to teammates at the University of Arkansas, to winning back-to-back Super Bowls, and then, of course, Jimmy's firing and him leaving the Cowboys. But I had never really actually heard them talk together about it at length. Like, yeah, they had done kind of small little Fox segments here and there, but I was really excited about the opportunity to sit down with, you know, we interviewed Jimmy for, I think, about 7 hours one day, and we probably spent, you know, 3.5 hours talking about his relationship with Jerry Jones. And Jerry, we interviewed for almost 40 hours. So the opportunity to really like dive deep and have these guys do what we call the postmortem, like, let's do a postmortem on your relationship all these years later. And they came up with some, like, what I like to think are really interesting and thoughtful answers. There's always going to be disagreements between these guys. If you get them in the same room and ask them who deserves credit for the Herschel Walker trade, you're going to get two different answers to this day. But a lot of them, you know, a lot of times they expressed a little bit of regret and a little bit of responsibility and a little bit of accountability while still acknowledging kind of the amazing things that they accomplished together. So that was really what drew us to this one from the get-go.
Do you get the sense that they like each other today?
I get the sense that they have reached a spot which, like, I personally admire, which is they can acknowledge that they will have disagreements from here until the very end. Like, they are never going to agree over certain things,
yeah,
but that's okay. And they say that's okay. And they can still have a relationship that's built on, like, respect and admiration, and they can be in the same room. And honestly, they can actually have a great time together. It reminds me of, you know, I co-direct with my brother, and there's probably going to be some things that we never agree on, but he's still my brother, and we can still have a relationship, and we can still kind of work together. And I do see similarities between that and Jerry and Jimmy.
After hearing it just yourself, this is just the opinion of McLean Way.
Yeah.
Who do you blame for the divorce?
That's a great question. I like ebbed and flowed throughout like the 2 years of this relationship. Like, and honestly, I think that's a sign of Jerry being able to make good arguments and Jimmy being able to get good arguments. Where I ultimately came down was, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I do understand both these guys. Is what I didn't really realize about Jerry before I made this documentary, that was kind of a realization that started to form. And I'm sure maybe you guys know these things, but for me, it was new information, which was this guy had a transformative experience in college. He won the 1964 national championship at the University of Arkansas, and it changed his life. It was the best thing that ever happened to him. Years later, when he makes $100 million in oil and gas, he does what me and my friends, and maybe you guys would do if you would have won, netted $100 million. You go and you buy the Dallas Cowboys. It's like the most fun thing you can do. And I think Jerry did that in an attempt to try and like recapture that feeling that he had winning the 1964 national championship, which is something that I think we'd all want to do. You know, we all had fun in college and we all would like to go back to those days and relive those. And I don't think Jerry was any exception. But what Jerry did was he hired one of his best friends that he's known since 17 years old to come along on this ride. And then Jimmy was like, you hired me to do a job and I need to do that job. And the way that I know how to do that job is I get in the locker room and I convince these guys to go out every Sunday and sacrifice their health and their bodies so that we can go win Lombardi trophies. But the sideline, practice, locker room, these are my areas. And when you bring cameras into the ESPN draft room or you come into these areas, yes, I think you can be a distraction at times in the endeavor that you hired me to do to go win you Lombardi trophies. So I like saw both sides. I saw Jerry as the human wanting to recapture this, and he's the owner. He should be allowed to do kind of whatever he wants. But then I saw Jimmy's point of view too, which is, hey, I have my own job to do. And sometimes when you're in these spaces, it hurts my ability to do my job. So I kind of ebbed and flowed, but ultimately I felt like I understood where both these guys were coming from.
McClain Way, the director of America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys, dropping today on Netflix, joining us here on The Fan. How much of this is past versus present?
I'd say it's about 80% past. You know, it's like we shot enough that we could have done multiple episodes on the more present day version of the Dallas Cowboys, because we did spend a lot of time with the team in the 2023 season. And we were kind of like on that hype train. Like, they had won 16 games at home. You know, they were like going in against Green Bay. It was like, hey, maybe a playoff run's possible here. So we had filmed a ton up for that. Obviously, that Green Bay game was a fascinating game to film. Such a historic, devastating loss, and we had cameras on it. But in some ways, that was kind of the end of our modern day storyline, because we filmed a little bit in 2024, but it was just hard to find a little bit more of that drama in the 2024 season. But it was interesting. I mean, we've got to film with Steven and Charlotte and Jerry Jr. and like the whole family operation. It's all like fascinating. But I'd say it's about, you know, the seventh episode ends roughly, you know, halfway through that episode is the Michael Irvin trial in 1996 after they've won their third Super Bowl. So that gives you a sense of kind of the first seven episodes are pretty much in the past.
McClain, you know, we talked about the Jerry Jimmy relationship, and I mean, that's obviously such a big focus for so many fans, even 30 years later when they look at it. Because you said that they're always going to have these differences and things like that. Did you get the sense from either of them that they thought anything could have prolonged that relationship? Or do you think they felt like, no, this always had probably a 5-6 year expiration date? It wasn't going to be able to go any further.
It's a great question. I think that like Jerry would answer it with like, I didn't mean to be careless, but perhaps I was like that. He says like a version of that, which is like, his reasoning is like, I had put all my money on this team. I had gotten crucified for firing Tom Landry. I had become a little calloused to some of the criticism, or I was just reactive and instinctive to it. And I had lost my tolerance for kind of things that Jimmy was doing is kind of the way that he would paraphrase that. I think that Jimmy does like to say, and I have no reason not to believe him, like, listen, I did these jobs in 5-year runs. And I think to a degree that's true, because I don't know how – it's interesting. I don't know how long Jimmy's coaching style as a highly demanding coach, as a yeller, as a screamer, as a very militant, intense coach would have lasted with Troy, Emmett, Michael, Dion becoming like multi-millionaires and suddenly becoming global icons of themselves. And that's no knock against those guys. That's just the difference of like – Jimmy kind of coached these guys a little bit on their earlier rookie contracts. And then when Barry Switzer came in, it's like these guys had all netted like tens of millions of dollars by that point. And perhaps it's a little bit harder to get yelled at by a coach 7 days a week, like when you're kind of your own global famous entity. So I think that's what they would say, you know, about how long when it came to an end, but it felt like it was the time for these guys to move on. I really don't know how much they were really talking to each other at the end there.
So take us behind the curtain. What was it like hanging out with Jerry and Steven Jones? What were they like behind the scenes, and your observations of the way they run the Cowboys?
Yeah, I was always very impressed. And like, you guys know this world probably way, way better than I do. But just as someone that like, I grew up in Los Angeles in the late 90s, I honestly didn't really grow up rooting for an NFL team just because I didn't have one. So I knew Jerry as kind of the larger than life Texan and owner of the Dallas Cowboys. And I knew it was a little bit of a family business, but I didn't know much more than that. And so I came in and it was just like interesting. It's like they Jerry definitely is involved in like every major decision. There's no doubt. But I do think that he takes information and advice and the opinion of counsel. Like, it's a little bit of Knights of the Round Table. Like, everyone does kind of get a chance to chime in and tell dad or grandpa, because even sometimes the grandkids are in these meetings, how they feel and what they would do. And ultimately, I think it's Jerry's final decision. There's no doubt about that. But he enjoys like a robust discussion, and he doesn't mind if someone plays devil's advocate. He's not afraid to kind of get pushed back. And that was my experience. I mean, I know you guys have huge experience interviewing Jerry, but my experience was like you could kind of push Jerry in the interview and disagree with him, and he bounces back. He's fine with that.
Yeah.
Because I think he knows like, well, a better conversation will come out of it. So that was my opinion.
McLean Way, the co-director of America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys, now out on Netflix. Dallas Morning News had a quote from Charlotte Jones that they put out yesterday that was in this documentary where she said, "We say we'll get him next time, but we're running out of we'll get them next times." Do you get the sense that that's Jerry's perspective at all? Do you get the sense that Jerry is keenly aware of like, hey, if I want to have this happen again, I'm running out of time?
100%. Like I'm not a Dallas Cowboys fan, so I really don't know what the pain of this 30-year history has been. I will not pretend that I have that every year I have felt that. So I have a concept of the fan dissatisfaction, but I don't feel it as a fan myself. So I will admit that. But I do think that this family wants to win one more than anything. And I do, I just feel that having been around them. And it's less that they want it for themselves, but they want it for their dad. Like, they want one more for Jerry. And every year that they get closer but don't get it or move farther back in that goal, I think hurts them pretty bad. And I know they're obviously on a highly successful franchise. They do incredibly well off the field, better than any other football team. And I know that family's proud of that. But I think that they still have a deep, deep desire to win one more. And I think part of that is they want to win one more that's not associated with this 90s era. Like, yes, Jerry did win one without Jimmy with Barry Switzer, but no doubt that's a part of the same team nucleus that Jerry, Jimmy built, the Herschel trade that gets into the argument between them. I think Jerry and this, they would like one more that is not associated with this 90s team. And I don't blame them. I get that.
You're an LA guy, so I often compare it to Kobe and Shaq. Kobe had to win his title without Shaq to get the credit, right? Shaq was the dominant big man, and everyone here basically attributes those titles to Jimmy. So we figure that burns Jerry up to go ahead and win it his way.
100%. I mean, I think that that's like obviously a large portion of the documentary is like you get to kind of hear from both sides about the things that Jerry did. And no doubt, I think that sometimes I do think that Jerry doesn't take, and I know this might shock your listeners, but enough credit for some of the things that he has done and did do. And I used to always kind of look at it a little bit like, you know, it's like all Jimmy wanted to do was win Lombardi trophies. And I get that endeavor, but people like Jerry Jones make those Lombardi trophies mean something because they build massive fan interest and they build the value of this game and they get people talking about it and what we're doing right here. Like, I've made so many other sports documentaries on different sports that making this was my first football documentary. It made me just, from an outsider's perspective, appreciate just how important football is. It's the only thing that really matters in our country in terms of television ratings or viewership. It's the unicorn that drives the entire business that I'm in. And I do think that Jerry has a significant part of that. And I get people that just want to win Lombardi trophies, but you also need a massive amount of human beings to be interested in those Lombardi trophies. And I think that Jerry Jones like played a significant part of making these things mean something. Like, it's why we talk about these things and why men make such deep, deep sacrifices to go win them.
We know you got to run, so this is the final one. Was there anything, based upon the other sports documentaries you've done and following them around, where you said, that doesn't add up? Now, the 30-year drought makes sense maybe because of this, or a big surprise that caught you off guard that may have, you know, contributed to the Cowboys coming up short in following them for a couple years?
You know what? I think that like there's a couple things that come to mind. One is that I always heard.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from.
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
From everyone, because we talked to so many Dallas reporters, like, God, you can say anything about Jerry Jones. You can say anything about Jerry Jones. He's like one of those kind of inflatable clowns. Like, you can knock him as hard as you want, but he's going to come right back up. And Dale Hansen even said something like that. Like, man, I would rip Jerry Jones in the next day at the field. Hey, come right up to me. Hey, how you doing, Dale? Great to see you, Dale. Yeah. And he was like, the guy was undefeatable in a certain way. And I always thought that was true. And I do think that's true. The only thing that I think people haven't pointed out is like, but he didn't put Jimmy Johnson in the Ring of Honor for 30 years, which people were highly critical of Jerry for. But I think in a certain way, I just saw that as how painful this breakup and this relationship got to be for Jerry, because it is true. Jerry does not hold grudges, but the only thing that he couldn't do for 30 years was kind of put Jimmy in the Ring of Honor. And to me, that was just a little bit of a reflection of like, man, these two dudes did kind of hurt each other. Yeah. It was one of the things that I was probably most surprised about is you just assume interviewing these guys when I interviewed them in 2024, that they would have been like, how, this is old history. It's bygones be bygones. Things are good now. And both of them took every word that they said about each other very seriously, very slowly, and very deliberately. And I think that's a sign of, yes, they do have a relationship built on respect and admiration, but there was some pain, deep pain, that these two guys caused each other. And as a filmmaker, you're like, great, I want to explore that. Yeah. But always surprising.
Did you get the sense that McCarthy and Schottenheimer are free to do it their way? Because, you know, the perception is that Jerry is going to interfere in metal.
I got the sense that, yes, I think so. I don't get the sense that Jerry, you know, obviously he's a different version of himself at 82 years old than he was in the 90s, you know, and I think that's just being a human being, you know. But I got the sense that I think that Jerry is optimistic as always about this season. You know, the kids told us a funny anecdote where they were like, man, you would think that Jerry would be the one that would be the most disappointed the day after our season's end, but he's always the one that picks up the phone call and calls us first thing in the morning and tells us to get back on the horse. So Jerry was always interesting like that. You know, the year that they went 1-15, everyone talked about that just being the worst year of their life, the worst year of their life, the worst year of their life. And honestly, it was kind of hard to get Jerry to say it was the worst year of life. He kept being like, I don't know, I was so happy to be in the NFL. Like,
yeah.
It was like, I got one win in one year and I got my game ball and I kept my one win game ball. Yeah, he was just like kind of on cloud nine. So sometimes Jerry's like that. When you think he's going to say one thing, he says the other.
Hey man, we could have you for the entire hour. You're absolutely tremendous. Thank you so much and congratulations. We'll all be talking about it and covering it this week.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean. Thanks, Bobby. Thanks for having me on, guys.
McLean Way, the director of America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys, out on Netflix right now. How nasty are these practices going to get? Who's this new corner? Tommy Yarsh, DallasCowboys.com is next. It will be Joe Milton Friday against the Falcons in the preseason finale. Dak Prescott will not be playing, and they're supposed to be getting a little frisky at the Ford Center at the Star starting tonight. Brian Schottenheimer said he wants to have some very physical practices. Let's talk about all of it with Tommy Yarsh, DallasCowboys.com, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. Good morning, Thomas. How are you?
Good morning, Sean. Good morning, Bobby. How are we doing, fellas?
Doing pretty well. Your ideal pick to play quarterback Friday night between Greer, Milton, and Dak would be who?
You know, if it was me, and they obviously don't pay me anywhere near enough what they do to Brian Schottenheimer to make these kinds of decisions, I think I would give Dak Prescott a series or two, just kind of to get back into the swing of things in terms of playing in an NFL game setting. You know, you add in the fact that, yes, he's going into year 10 and he hasn't played in the preseason since 2019 and he's been completely fine in the regular season. There hasn't been any necessarily ramp-up period for him that hasn't affected his success. But I think there's never a negative to getting out there and getting your legs back under you in that kind of setting. Now, obviously, I know, you look at Joe Burrow last night when he's running away from eight defenders, gets walloped in the end zone, and you worry about injury. That's totally fine. I think you can plan the game a certain way to where you're getting the ball out of his hands quickly so you're not worried about sacks or anything like that. So, but it is going to be Joe Milton, and they continue to want to get this guy snaps, want to get him reps, and want to get him in the game as much as they can so they can evaluate what they've got.
And who would you play after that Dak series if it's you?
I think still Milton, just because you still kind of don't know what you have. I know it hasn't been great in the last 2 weeks, but if you continue to give him these reps, at some point, eventually it's going to click. And every quarterback, it's different in terms of when that happens, right? And sometimes it takes longer than others. I think you look at Trey Lance right now, and maybe it's starting to click a little bit in L.A., and it just didn't in Dallas. So it could be the same thing for Joe Milton. We got to remember this is only his sixth NFL game this past week in terms of times he's played in an NFL setting. He had five preseason games and then the game against the Bills to close out the year last year. So I think Brian Schottenheimer and his staff are correct in the sense that, hey, we got to get this guy reps. But so I would give Milton the nod after Dak, but I don't know if I would play him as long and not give Will Greer as much time. I think Will Greer has earned himself some reps too.
Who's your number two to start the season?
I think it's still Milton. I just think that they have put so much into it and invested so much into it and given him the reps in training camp, and the guys have that much familiarity with him that, they're going to continue to bank on his development and continue to hope that he finds a way to put it together. And obviously the paramount hope is that Dak Prescott doesn't get hurt and you don't have to turn to Joe Milton this year and just kind of let him continue to develop and put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Tommy Arsch from DallasCowboys.com joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Yesterday, Brian Schottenheimer said, hey, I think you guys are going to be surprised by some of the guys on the 53-man roster. Does that mean we are going to be surprised by some of the guys on the 53-man roster, or does that mean Brian Schottenheimer doesn't know who we're projecting on the 53-man roster?
That's a good question. Maybe a little bit of both. I was trying to put together my very unofficial and not great roster projection yesterday, and I found myself saying, oh, okay, I could be a little bit, maybe not surprised, but I wasn't expecting that, or okay, does this guy fit maybe better than we thought he would? I think a couple of names that come to mind are James Houston, just because of the way that he's playing. Does he take somebody's spot on the defensive line, or what about Andrew Booth? Is the pick six enough for him to make the roster, and is the lack of depth at corner enough for him to make the roster at this point? So I think it is a little bit of both in terms of, all right, we're going to surprise people because of how people have played and how Brian Schottenheimer's staff is different than Mike McCarthy's, and maybe they value certain players more in their scheme. And then, of course, they're going to judge the whole body of work. So do they feel like somebody this preseason has had a better camp or a better preseason than another player that's maybe been around here longer?
Rank the likelihood that these three players are not on the roster, okay? Will Greer, okay. Mozzie Smith, Miles Sanders.
Will Greer, I think, is unlikely that he's not on the roster. I think they go three quarterbacks. Mozzie Smith, I'm moderate, leaning more towards unlikely. I'm moderate. I think it wouldn't be the most shocking thing, only because I think they like what they've seen from Thoia, and Perrion Winfrey has had flashes here and there. It's just a question of, has Winfrey done enough to convince them that he can be better in Matt Eberflus's attack front and go up the field better than Mozzie can? And then the last one, I'm sorry, who's Miles Sanders, right. I'm trying not to put too much stock into one preseason game. I don't think he was seeing the field great against the Ravens. And, that obviously that can't be the sole determining factor of things, but I think I'm moderate on Miles Sanders too, because Phil Maffa has been playing really well, and I think he's done more than I expected him to in the preseason games, and it still hasn't been much, right? Like, he's not rushing for 100 yards a game, but I think he's a little bit quicker than I thought he was, and maybe finally being able to play healthy off the labrum injury that he was playing with last year at Clemson has contributed to that. So I would be moderate on Miles Sanders, and then leaning towards unlikely for Mozzie and then unlikely for Will Greer.
Tommy Yarsh on the D&M Leasing Hotline from DallasCowboys.com, 105.3 The Fan. Who is their new corner?
Who's their new corner? My bad. I like barely heard you. Yeah, so this is Michael Ojemudia, who has spent a little bit of time with Matt Eberflus when he was in Chicago back in 2022. I believe it was only one game, but he's a third-round pick in Denver back in 2020, 13 career starts in the NFL, but he hasn't played in the NFL since 2022. He played for the D.C. Defenders, I believe, in the UFL most recently. So this is a guy that, you know, they lost two corners in the game against the Ravens. It was Bruce Harmon, who was waived with an injury settlement, and then Christian Matthew, who they signed a couple of weeks ago, too. So really just continuing to build depth in that cornerback room. They're going to give him a shot this week in practice and see what he can do in the preseason game and see if, you know, maybe he can, it's enough to at least consider, you know, 53 man. I doubt it unless this guy has a, you know, Darrell Revis kind of week and turns into that. But, you know, maybe this is a practice squad guy who can, if the corner depth continues to be an issue going into the regular season, can maybe get bumped up a couple times.
Does the Jonathan Mingo potential IR placement mean Trayshon Holden just got his spot in the receiver room?
Maybe. I think I would lean more towards Ryan Flannoy. If it's just me, that's just my opinion. I think Ryan Flannoy's had a heck of a preseason and a heck of a camp, and I think he gives you more than Holden. Not that Holden hasn't been good. I think he's been great, and you know, I think Flannoy is just quicker, more of a separator than Holden is. Holden not really necessarily known for a speed guy or getting separation. He just kind of always has a knack for coming down with the ball. And you know, of course, Ryan Flannoy has probably the most coulda, shoulda, woulda been yards in NFL history throughout these first two preseason games, just because Joe Milton and Will Greer have missed him so many times on, frankly, what should be easy throws that he should probably have had much better numbers than he's had in these past 2 weeks. But I think...
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I would lean more towards Ryan Flannoy getting the nod over Trayshon Holden than Jalen Brooks being that last wide receiver in the room because of what he can do on special teams.
Tommy, are things open for the fans tonight to go watch these fisticuffs that Brian Schottenheimer wants to see?
Yeah, things are open. So go come to the Star and watch the Cowboys practice. It'll always a good time to get in front of fans, and especially back at home. You know, I know I can imagine that it's pretty difficult for some Cowboys fans that are local and can't make the trip to Oxnard. Yeah, well, now you got two opportunities today and tomorrow to come watch the Cowboys practice. Should be a lot of fun. And Brian Schottenheimer says he wants it to be physical. It needs to be physical, because I think they haven't been the most physical team on the field the last two games. Not to say that they haven't been physical whatsoever, but I was expecting more. And so I'm sure they'll ramp it up tonight and tomorrow, and we'll see if that translates on Friday.
24 hours ago, we asked your colleague, Nick Eatman, to rank the comedy, the funny level of the four of us on the morning show. Would you please do the same?
All right. I was kind of warned about this coming into this, so I've had some time to marinate and think on it. Sorry. I didn't mean to rat you out there, Peyton. And I also dismissed the $20 bill that he just slid under the table.
Hey, we know that's a joke. Peyton would never give someone $20.
All right. Number one, Bobby Belt.
He's
made me crack up so many times here early on, and every time I get a text from Bobby.
But how much is off the record? Is this on air or like off the record stuff?
It's a mixture of both.
Okay.
Just like most friendships, right?
Okay.
So I think, yeah. So whenever I get a text from Bobby, he's like, "Hey, y'all want to see something? Hey, I got something. I know it's gonna be funny." Number two, I'll go Peyton Russell, not because he slid me the 20, but because, you know, I appreciate the laughs we get to have when he calls me every time I come on. Mm-hmm. And then I had to put him third because he didn't show up to work today, RJ. Mm. Sorry, RJ. And then, Sean, no hard feelings, but I'm putting you in at fourth.
Tommy Yarsh, Dallas Cowboys.
Great answers, Tommy. You're going places in this business.
Brought to you by the Windstar. I guess to get voted number one, I just have to insult someone's attire every day, like Bobby does. Poor old Tommy. I defended Tommy, you know, dress for the job you want, not the one you have. And this is what I get, fourth place. Thank you, brother. We'll talk to you Thursday.
I'm glad you're going to still have me on Thursday.
We're contractually obligated. It's not my choice.
Okay. All right. Well, nonetheless, I'm looking forward to it. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Tommy. Tommy Yarsh is brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. Let's finish up Ask Reddit. And we have a Trey Hendrickson update that could affect the Micah divorce. We'll finish up Ask Reddit with KNC next. But first, let me go ahead and get you set. There's a reason that the energy is still going this high, even at the age of 43, even waking up at 4:40 in the morning, and even in the final 20 minutes of the show. It is the greatness of the Low T Center. There's never been a better time to start TRT than right now. With a free consultation and a free T test, best thing about it, it's free and fast. The Low T Center and Synergenx have on-site labs to process your test quickly. If you qualify, you can start treatment today. With locations conveniently located across DFW, you can be seen by one of Synergenx or Low T Center's healthcare professionals and get started. They give you the power to take control of your health, to have the energy with the 4:45 wake up, to have the energy to get through the day, to have the energy for the gym session, and have the energy when you get home with the kids. You even have the option of white glove, in-center care, or medically monitored custom dose TRT at home. It's the Low T Center. Tell them Sean for the Fan sent you. All right, we got a loaded crosstalk with the KNC masterpiece with Corey Majors, Kevin Hagelin here on Sean and Bobby Choppy out on vacation this week. Trey Hendrickson told Laura Rutledge that he and the Bengals are close on salary and years, but guaranteed money remains a sticking point. Both sides remain dug in. He'll get a very high per year average, but the structure of the deal is key. And that is not surprising that the Cincinnati Bengals want to make the actual guaranteed money the sticking point.
Do you think, how much of that do you think is age based as well?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he's not somebody I think would project for a lot of teams to be a guy who's going to play till he's 40. He had injury history early in his career.
He's 30.
He'll be 31 in 2 months, something like that. Yeah. So he's somebody who, as an aging player, I'm sure the Bengals feel like, you're not going to be Bruce Smith getting me 10 sacks at 39 years old.
The current NFL landscape says a very small percentage of your best players are over 30 outside of offensive and interior defensive.
But this is the goal for everyone now, right? After the Watson deal, how much can we, that's the new crowning achievement. How much can we get guaranteed? I'm just using Spotrac. Miles, did I say the Miles deal or Watson?
Watson is what you said.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Then I take it to Miles Garrett's deal, $160 million value. The practical guarantee is $123.5 million.
Wow, so more than 75%.
Crosby's $106.5 million. He's got $91.5 million, practical guarantee. Yeah.
Which the practical guarantee is just basically what's guaranteed the day you sign. The fully guaranteed is what has trigger dates built into it.
And what did TJ get? But the guarantee,
they're going to regret that contract.
It's a $123 million contract, 108 guaranteed. So that's what these guys are trying to go ahead and get.
What do you think? Because we've discussed guaranteed contracts for years now.
Yeah.
If they did say, okay, we're going fully guaranteed contracts, that this would eliminate a lot of this type of negotiation, or would there always be something?
No, the annual per year would become the new thing. Like if they were all fully guaranteed, the new thing would just be the sticking point would be the per year. So like,
and that would drop
total guarantee, like basically total guaranteed.
Right.
It has always been, it's essentially a lot of people, it's total guaranteed as like a percentage of the cap is like a lot of times what people want. So like that's how they're going to value how rich your deal is and whatever else. And so if Trey Hendrickson's getting offered, hey, we're right on the years, we're right on the average annual salary, they want to guarantee a year of it, then he's never going to. And that's way far apart. But like I would rather, if I was a fan of that team, I would rather hear they were $5 million apart on annual value.
Agreed.
Than to hear that they were apart on, he wants to guarantee 1 year and that's not going to work.
He wants like probably three.
Yeah. Something two and a half, three probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Corey, did you start watching The Gambler today?
Yeah, I did. I started watching the Kevin said I would wake up at 3 in the morning and start watching.
Yeah, did you finish it?
I have not yet, Kevin. There's only so many hours in the day. It's good. It's better than I thought. It's put me in that time period again of excellence and greatness. And there's some cool little stories that I don't remember. There's things that I'm like, oh, I was 8 years old whenever this was happening, so obviously I wasn't thinking about this the way I think about it right now. And it kind of lets me relive that glory day. But then it's frustrating watching Troy Aikman and watching Emmett and Michael and them talking about them, the demand they put on themselves and how physical practices were and how important those things were to their success and their championship, and then seeing the lack of excellence since then, you know, since that era. So it's very frustrating, but it almost kind of is like, man, I really wish these Cowboys would watch this and then say, that's what we're going to be despite everything else that's out there.
So can I ask you a question about that then? But why? Like, why would that incentivize them? They get paid all of the same.
You're right. There are people, you discuss this a lot about yourself. There are people that want to be great.
There are.
I always talk to RJ about this. Like, Choppy would never give up like $5 million a year if he's Tom Brady.
Yeah.
But Tom Brady can walk on water anywhere he wants because he's got GOAT status. Yes. You know
what
I mean?
See what Mahomes has done with that contract as well.
Yeah.
This is a genius move for his
team. Tom Brady also probably circumvented the salary cap and got signed money.
Multiple times. Business. Yeah, he definitely did that for sure.
MJ took less. Until he got paid like 30 1 year in Chicago. Is it worth it to take $3 or $4 million less to have the godlike status where everywhere, like Dion and Emmett and Irvin, they don't have to pay for any meals around here?
Well, and that, can we use Micah as an example? There's something that Micah said, I think it was right after the end of the season. Maybe I'm off base about that, and I'm really disappointed that it appears as though that is not the case anymore. At the time, he said, I would much rather get paid $35 million per year and not be getting double-teamed on every single play. And clearly, that is not the case anymore.
Because they didn't invest in anybody that's going to take away that double-team, Kevin.
Well, because they don't have the money, because they couldn't get it done for $35 million.
Yeah.
But not because they drug their feet on it, God forbid. But like that's one of the things, is I'm disappointed in...
Look at Dirk.
Yeah.
Look at Dirk's status.
Dirk's a great example.
With just the one... Because Dirk gave up money all the time.
Yeah.
And then Dirk got the rug pulled out from him by the organization after that, though. Like, I mean, there is some point where, like, a lot of guys...
You're saying he never gave up money before they won the title?
No, I'm saying he gave up the money, and then, like, in retirement, like, he doesn't even have a good relationship with his team anymore.
Yeah, but I don't know how much... I don't have the chronological order of the years Dirk gave up the money, how much did it contribute to the 2011 title? Yes. I don't know.
Absolutely.
If it did...
contributed to that.
I would... say it's well worth it. I'm still going to have more money than I can spend. My kids will have the money.
But not everybody feels that way.
Oh, right.
And in fact, do you think that's a minority opinion now?
You got to be good enough to be in a like GOAT discussion.
Right.
Or if you're going to stay in DFW for the rest of your life, like a lot of these guys do, your Tony Romo, your Dak Prescott, Like, Dak hasn't caught enough heat for taking 60 in this deal from a legacy standpoint. Yeah. You want to take it? Go ahead and take it, right? It's your money. It's not my money. You're the one that's getting the cash. But if Dak Prescott got a title, are you kidding me? It's like they say with any Nick who goes to New York and they're like, Jalen Brunson will be the king of the city. How much is that worth in the money you trade in? It's easy for us to trade it in. We're not the one getting the millions. But Jalen Brunson would be the king of New York.
Tens and tens of millions.
Yes.
I haven't seen the Emmett episode yet. I'm in the Ake Mania. But the Emmett episode is probably going to tell us that that's when this part of it started for Jerry. The negotiation, the headline, the 365 drama. Like, it was already there, but this is a story I can ride through the entire offseason. And how many times has he done it since? And how many guys have complained about it? As they're like, can't I just go play football? And this part too? And Jerry's like, no, we love this headline. This is a good thing for us. This is a positive.
See,
yeah, I think that's when that started. He saw that. Because what Aikman got his $11 million, right? Like, it was very early on. And then Emmett is the holdout. And Jerry was like, holy crap, they're covering this more than they're covering anything else. This is it. This is the formula.
I get that, but that is so inaccurate in terms of what actually happens. If the Cowboys were to win the Super Bowl, nobody would talk about anything else.
No.
Like, they talk about them all the time and they don't win jack ass. If this team was going to the Super Bowl, it would dwarf any coverage you get about Micah not signing, Dak.
But you have to know how to build a Super Bowl winner.
And they don't. And that's, look, I go back to that when you talk about the Dak Prescott thing. I have conflicted feelings about that because if I'm Dak Prescott, don't I also sit there and say, all right, I'll take $7 million less per year for what? Like, what leads you to believe?
It's like Dak and Lamb and Micah should have all sat down and said, let's each take five less, and you have to get something in writing contractually that it's going to go towards.
You're getting us Charles Haley.
These 35 players that we hand selected.
Because otherwise, what makes you think that this front office is like, let's do it?
And we've talked about this before. No matter how much they would even want to do that, people cannot begin to understand the pressure the PA puts on them. To like, you better max this out because you are costing people below you when you don't.
Right.
And that's, they hear from lawyers and other players routinely about it.
Yeah. Like, Deshaun Watson's a hero to them.
I'm sure.
Because now everyone is trying to get the deal fully guaranteed. Corey, what do you need to tease?
We do have Nick Harris joining us at 10:20, and we'll have Katie Nolan from SiriusXM and the Casuals podcast at 11 o'clock. Maybe she'll stick around for a little bit and we can play some fun games.
By the way, how bad have things gotten for Anthony Richardson as he has been named the backup to start the season? Danny Dimes, baby.
See, at least you didn't spend a top pick on Joe Milton.
I will say this, though, being a Cowboy fan, follower, worker, going into this, how would you like to just go into your year as a Colts fan right now with this news?
Oh, my gosh. So depressed.
At least we have some intrigue and drama and fun and curiosity. Joe Flacco, like, you're a Brown season ticket holder for the first 4 to 6 games where Joe's going to play.
Is that what you think? Is that what you're setting the over on?
Someone, I think someone set out the bye week, and that's when switches will probably happen. But Daniel Jones, even worse. Like, Flacco at least played well in Cleveland. Like, you're a Colts fan going into Daniel Jones.
So, I mean, anything post-Luck.
Covering them.
Rivers. Wasn't Hasselbeck near there? That was even before Luck.
Wentz.
You had Phillip Rivers coming out of retirement.
Ryan.
You have Matt Ryan. It's just like,
yeah, but this
that's
is worse.
Purgatory.
That's at least a little curiosity. Does Phillip Rivers still have it? Does Matt Ryan have something? Anthony Richardson, new draft pick? Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones.
So you prefer like the Saints spot, right? Where you're like, hey, Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler probably aren't good.
1,000,000%.
But at least I'm not 100% on that.
Do you think it's a coincidence that we have like Dan Dockich in that market and Tony Grossi in the Cleveland market, where it's like, man, they are bored. They got to find something else to do to stir stuff up.
Like, what is a more depressing quarterback situation in that Colts realm than that? I'm looking at the league. Saints, a little bit unknown.
Yeah.
Cleveland's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
But at least you have like, I don't know.
So
maybe,
much money tied maybe, up in somebody who's because, not going to play, though.
But the Daniel Jones, thing is already telling you that the Richardson thing is almost done. At least in Cleveland, you have the
Gabriel,
you still get the wait to see with Gabriel and Shador. All right, the fellows take over next. We're back tomorrow with the Hump Day edition.
Hump Day!
This is the KNC Masterpiece next on The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.